Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to a special bonus episode of Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today it's all about NYC Prep, which is a one-season show that aired on Bravo 15 years ago. It premiered in June of 2009, and it centered on a group of six high schoolers in New York City and strove to be basically the reality TV version of Gossip Girl, which had just premiered a couple of years earlier. I remember watching NYC Prep and loving it when it originally aired on Bravo, but I hadn't seen an episode of the show until the past couple weeks when I binge rewatched it once it was added to Peacock as one of the many Bravo Vault shows added to streaming. Obviously, I had to have someone on the podcast who had also rewatched so we could discuss what it was like to revisit the Bravo classic. So I invited Kevin Fallon, who has long covered Bravo and is the editor of Obsessed at the Daily Beast. We both had similar reactions to rewatching the show all these years later, and it was really fascinating, honestly, to compare notes, discuss each of the cast members, their parents, the production elements of the show, the Gossip Girl comparisons, and why the show hasn't exactly aged super well. Before we get to my conversation with Kevin, though, I did want to give you brief updates on where the cast is now, because while we touched on that in our discussion a bit, we didn't do like an exhaustive outline of where they all ended up. So I wanted to make sure to provide you with that information up top. So Jesse ended up attending FIT and fulfilling her dream of working in fashion. She's been working at Chanel for the past decade. She married a guy in finance, but they got divorced about a year and a half later. PC went to Occidental in California. He did some acting and a lot of photography, which he posted a lot of on his now inactive Instagram account. He made headlines in 2018, where he married one of his best friends in a platonic marriage, meaning they weren't romantic with one another. And Tiffany Trump was a flower girl at their wedding in Vegas. His wife filed for divorce 2 years after their wedding. Sebastian went to the College of Charleston and lives in Philadelphia with his food influencer wife and son, and he's the head of real estate at Rove. Kelly ended up releasing a single 2 years after the show, so she did pursue her singing career after all. But now apparently she works in PR at a record label, so I think she's given up on the singing aspirations, but she did still wind up in the music industry, so good for her. Camille was kicked out of her high school because of being on the show. She did not fulfill her Harvard dreams either, but she did go to William & Mary, and now she is married with a child in California. And then there's Taylor, who there are a lot of heartbreaking rumors about online that are not hard to find with a quick Google, but she has not had an internet presence in over a decade. Okay, so that is what we know about where they are now, but let's get to my discussion with Kevin Fallon about where the cast of NYC Prep was 15 years ago when the show aired and our reactions to rewatching it in 2024. Enjoy our chat, and please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. Okay, today we're gabbing with Kevin Fallon, the editor of the Daily Beast Obsessed, who has covered Bravo extensively throughout his career. And I was a fan of his writing even before we ever started crossing paths at Bravo events. Kevin and I both rewatched NYC Prep since it dropped on Peacock. I'm thrilled to have him on here to talk about it. Kevin, how's it going?
It's going great. It's been a confusing week revisiting something from that past of mine. It's been wild.
Wild, yeah. I was going to say, thank God you didn't bring anybody with you, because guests of guests do not bring guests, in the words of Jesse.
I mean, if that was a Housewives like moment today, it would be the most memed thing in the world.
Exactly. Completely. Like, and this was... obviously, this entire show happened before all of the Bravo fandom really blew up into what it is today. So, and it came before a lot of things that would have changed how this was, I think, welcomed or not welcomed. But I guess I wanted to start just by hearing, Kevin, about when the show was initially on in 2009, what was your relationship to it? Were you watching it back then? Had you watched any of it in the 15 years since then?
I hate to admit this because it means people can figure out my age, but it came out when I was a senior at college. I was attending NYU. I watched it live because even back then, I was a Bravo fan. There's just something in my DNA that gravitated towards that even before I covered it professionally. But I remember watching it. At the time, I was living in an apartment downtown, a one-bedroom apartment that I shared with three other people. Because that's all I could have afforded at the time when I was living in New York City. So to watch these kids from these just like privileged backgrounds, you know, gallivanting around Manhattan and, you know, throwing $100 bills in the air basically was almost like a hate watch for me. So I remember like being obviously so spellbound by it because these kids' lives were so surreal, but also just so bitter and jealous that they were, you know, at age 16, 17, and 18, living a life that I couldn't live as an actual adult in New York City at the time. So to have not seen a single episode of it since that time, 15 years ago, and watch it now was kind of a crazy experience because it's obviously I'm in such a different point in my life. And no longer close in age to them. So it's just going crazy.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like I'm guessing that also that feeling, the sort of like have and have not feeling that the show kind of thrived on. It also came right after the crash too of the stock market. So like that also, I think that probably impacted in a big way the way that people took the show at the time.
And also, it was the sort of heyday of Gawker. And I remember Richard Lawson, who now writes for Vanity Fair, and I've gotten to know through working in entertainment media. One of his first big writing gigs was writing recaps of NYC prep for Gawker.
Amazing.
And they were like the funniest things I've ever read. And, you know, as I was starting my own entertainment journalism career, his like tone and voice and the like sheer fun he had recapping NYC prep and just like the irreverence that he had while also taking it seriously kind of really informed the way that I would end up sort of like making my voice in entertainment writing. So it also weirdly beyond just being something that I watched for fun because of that experience of reading Richard's recaps, it ended up also sort of being very influential in the way that my career would go.
That's so funny. Yeah, I remember the Gossip Girl recaps on NY Mag sort of this in the same way, sort of informing. Mm-hmm. It was that sort of very specific time of internet and entertainment media. And we're actually going to circle back to Richard towards the end because he rewatched it and wrote an article about it, which I thought was great. So I'll read some quotes from that later on. But the other elephant in the room, I think, with the show is Gossip Girl, which had just premiered like a year or two earlier. I think the producers have said that like they wanted to do a real life version of that show. And it's an elephant in the room, but also Jesse talks about it literally in the first episode. The store clerk, she tries on something at Blue and Cream, I think. And the store clerk's like, "You look like Gossip Girl." And her quote is, "I hate that show. I liked eating at STK until they filmed there. I like to catch a cab at 8 a.m. and not have your trailer in front of my house and see a bunch of freshmen there." So it's so clearly to me, like, at least some of the cast members sort of had a disdain for Gossip Girl. Like, it wasn't cool to echo that show. Like, they were living the real life and it was nothing like that. But the producers, I think, wanted to echo Gossip Girl. And to me, that was sort of like an inherent tension that I was noticing kind of throughout as they were kind of fitting into these archetypes of reality TV, but also of Gossip Girl. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I mean, you could totally cast each one of the NYC prep members as like, you know, the, what's his name?
Chuck Bass,
yes, of the group, and the Serena and the Blair. And it's also really interesting, too, because Bravo really had great luck mining TV shows that were pop culture phenomenons and like sort of twisting them into a reality TV version of them. Like, famously, Desperate Housewives was a huge inspiration for the original Real Housewives of Orange County. And I think that the women on that show, when it was premiering, had a similar awareness of the comparison and also disdain for the comparison to the Desperate Housewives, the same way that the characters of NYC Prep are like, obviously we're being marketed as the real life Gossip Girl kids, but clearly we're so much better than that when really they were acting in the exact way that Gossip Girl satirized.
Right, exactly. It's like they thought they were portraying sort of the real version. And that's, I think, what sort of informed sort of the uneasiness that I felt watching the show back, was like there were sort of the jokes on them in a way. And I don't know if they knew what they were signing up for. And the last thing I'm going to say before we jump into really everything is, like, I went back and saw that there was an article that Vanessa Gregoriadis wrote. She profiled PC for New York Mag. So, and Vanessa Gregoriadis, for those listening, she just, like, is kind of this prolific profiler of celebrities. And she wrote something about PC. And in that article, there's a quote from Andy Cohen at the time, who was in charge of, like, development at Bravo. And he said, in a sense, NYC prep is the real kids of New York City. Those kids could be the offspring of the women on the Housewives show. And there actually is Ali Shapiro, who's Jill Zarin's daughter. I noticed her in the background of one of the parties in a later episode. Yeah. So there's the Gossip Girl element, but then there's also is that Real Housewives element of, like, these are sort of the, they could be the sort of, like, adulty children, like, who are growing up too fast. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that came to mind a lot as I was watching back as well.
And it's funny, too, that Andy made that comparison. So they could be the offspring of the Housewives, because I mean, I was shocked because I didn't remember this when I watched it from the first time, but rewatching it again, the parents are on the show.
Yeah.
Like, they are actively participating in this, and they're filming scenes in between when their kids are out partying and talking about sex and being debaucherous. Like, they are complicit in all of it and just happily a part of it. So you almost get the sense that the parents themselves wish they were the Real Housewives of New York City.
100%. Like, some of them probably auditioned for that show or went through casting for New York early on. I'm curious from that sort of angle, why you think these people did this show. My read on it, at least from the start of it, was like, this was something to put on their college admissions portfolios. And, like, they could say that they were talking about their charities on this show and like showing their lives and their extracurricular activities. Like, I don't know why else these parents would have signed off on their kids joining a show.
Which is funny if, like, that was the idea, because when I Googled some of, like, the where are they now or what happened to these kids articles, like, Camille was, like, kicked out of her school.
Right.
For participating in the show, and her dream of going to Harvard was ruined because of that. And she ended up going to, like, I think she went to William & Mary.
Yeah.
So it totally backfired if that was the goal. But the other interesting thing about the time that the show was airing was it was sort of the last breath of the New York City socialite era, the era that gave us Tinsley Mortimer.
Right.
Where the New York Post and Gawker and, you know, Perez Hilton, they were chronicling every single move of these young, early 20-something socialites. And I think that appealed to both these kids and their parents. Like, they wanted to have their last names in the society pages of Page Six. Mm. Like, they wanted to have their kids be a part of that scene because it meant that they had value in New York society. That, I think, 15 years later, having your teenage kid be a part of that scene would be seen as shameful or embarrassing, because you would be, if you actually had standing and wealth and notoriety in the New York City social scene, you would be above it now. But then they were actively trying to become a part of it.
Right, totally. And I think that brings us to the first person I want to talk about, which is PC, because he's from this really kind of storied family. His grandfather's, like, a parent of a self-made billionaire, and he was 18 at the time. So in this article that I read by Vanessa Gregoriadis, she talked about how he was the only one who didn't need his parents' permission to join the show because he could sign his own contract, and everybody else's parents had to sign off on it. So his is the one family that I don't think would have signed off on him being on the show. So here he is, kind of, like, acting like a full-fledged adult, trying to be the Chuck Bass of the group. He's kind of, like, the most complex character, I think, that we get introduced to via this show. Like, I don't know, like, his sexuality is a through line of the whole thing in kind of, like, a weird way. What did you make of PC upon rewatch?
So I remember having such a crush on him when I watched it 15 years ago, which I felt okay with, because I was 21 and he was 18. It wasn't creepy. Watching it back now, I forgot that, like, until each of these characters appeared on my screen, that they were children.
Literally children. Yep.
They look so, so young, and their mannerisms and their awkwardness and their, like, insecurities is so juvenile. And we're so used to seeing, like, self-assured, fully realized reality stars, even if they're acting like lunatics on screen. they're adult lunatics. Mm-hmm. So to like watch these babies was a huge shock to me. PC is obviously the most fully grown and fully realized of all of them, which I think is why he was such the central character and such a captivating character on the show, because he was way more mature and he read more mature on screen. He looked older than them. But I was really struck by the way he managed to sort of control his own narrative in a way that the others didn't seem to be able to. Like, he was very self-aware when he was saying something douchey. He like acknowledged the fact that he was being douchey and sort of like grinned about it. He had like a mischievousness about him that I didn't realize was so calculating when I saw it 15 years ago.
Right.
But he like, in a way that I think the other cast members didn't, knew how to be a star. And he really was, like, watching it again, like, he was a real star in a way. Like, some of those other people were kind of duds.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of now feel robbed of like seeing what he could have been if he had like a full-fledged reality TV career.
I completely agree. No, he was the biggest star on the show. And it's also, I think, the self-assuredness, like, it shows itself, I think, actually in that conversation that sort of was like talked around his sexuality. Like, there was that whole weird thing in Mexico with like his friend, and they were flirting with girls and they were saying that he was bisexual. But like, that whole part of it, to me, the way he handled all of that was very mature and actually kind of ahead of his time in some ways. He was like, yeah, so what if you think I'm XYZ, whatever you want to label me as? I'm still going to wear eyeliner and dress the way I want to dress. And like, be kind of this bitchy guy. Like, he just kind of like owned what he was, I think, in a lot of ways, which I actually at the time I remember not liking. But now I obviously, there were certain things I didn't like about how he behaved, but like I appreciated his sort of unapologetic confidence, I would say.
That's the other thing too, especially with like Real Housewives now and new Real Housewives. The thing that I see projected from the screen most is insecurity, even when they're trying to like control their narrative or perform in a way that might like endear them to the group. It all just projects such insecurity. And he never had that. Like, from the first frame of that show, he just like oozed confidence and assuredness. And I think that's sort of why he could steamroll everyone else on that show.
Right.
Part of it was because he was older, but part of it was just because he didn't have that same awkward insecurity that everyone else was struggling with.
Yeah. And I hadn't remembered how much he was like partying at the time. He was hanging out with like people in their 20s and 30s, and that was causing a stir. And he, you know, he has a couple filmed therapy sessions where he describes his lifestyle as sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right.
And I think this is what the producers sort of wanted out of the show, right? Which was like these kids living adult lives, essentially. And like, he was the most emblematic, I think, of that thread. Yeah. I think they wanted to follow.
There could be like a 3-hour conversation about the ethics of that.
Yeah, and like, of course.
Again, like, these were kids and cameras and producers were watching them drinking at bars and going to clubs. And you could question how organic and real some of the relationships and hookups were. But, you know, when it's 15-year-olds who think that they need to have sex with a guy just because they're a cast member on their show, that is a little icky and ethically iffy when you're talking about teenagers versus, like, you know, when people join Vanderpump Rules and start hooking up with cast members, like, they're adults making that decision, knowing that it's going to help them get more screen time. But when you're talking about teenagers, it's, like, a little different.
Oh, completely. And, like, it's even, I think, circling back sort of the connection to the Real Housewives, it's, like, yeah, it was modeled off of Gossip Girl, but like the way that the show is constructed is very Real Housewives-esque in that like they're throwing these dinner parties and they're like going to restaurant openings and things like that, which like I just don't really believe was like that big a part of these people's lives outside of filming for this show. You know what I mean? So there was sort of an unnaturalness, like sort of an inauthenticity to like just the setup of some of the scenes and things like that.
And grouping together people who would never have met each other in real life if they weren't a part of the show. And then those people trying to force relationships for the camera. Like, there's the like, Sebastian and Taylor are dating. They never would have even met each other had they not been cast in the show. And PC having to go to those dinner parties with 15-year-olds when he is 18 and living a much more mature life is something that, again, never would have happened if they weren't forced to in a housewives way.
100%. The next person I think that's more natural to talk about is Jessie, who she's the other senior in the group. She was the other person that I sort of remember sticking out the most from watching it back in the day. You know, I remember feeling up and down about her back then, but in rewatching, I really kind of gravitated towards Jesse. She is like really driven in school. She's really driven to like go to a, to go, she's going to FIT. She wants to work in fashion. She's doing all these internships. Like obviously her family has a lot of connections and like, that's kind of the sort of elephant in the room in some of the stuff that she's doing. But like, she wants to do this Operation Smile charity event and she like pulls it off by the end. I don't know, especially in the second half, I was like thinking to myself, like, you go, girl. Like, I like really liked Jessie and like, I was like kind of proud of her for some of like the hard work that she was putting in. How did you feel about her?
She seemed to me to be more than the other girls on the show living her actual life.
Yes.
Like the thing that she was doing, like, and pursuing the internships that she was, you know, trying to go after with the fashion designers and the fights that she was getting into with PC, sort of like her irritation with having to like humor the younger girls like Camille.
It's classic senior girl.
Right. You could just like tell that she was more organically experiencing her life on the show than the other people were who were trying to like, I think, make things happen because I thought it would be better for TV.
Totally.
And I thought also like her dynamic with PC was so interesting. Like the, you know, they used to be a couple and now they're best friends, but is there like her intention? Is she sort of his beard because he might be gay? Like their close friendship leading to them being jealous of each other and fighting constantly. Like it, that all seemed,
it was compelling.
So real. Yeah. And it was fascinating.
Yeah. And it's also, there was a dynamic within that dynamic that I would really remember from high school, which is like, you're at the end of senior year, you become so close to these people and then you're all just going to go in different directions. And like, there's an anxiety that sort of manifests itself at that time in your life of like, maybe you push people away because you're scared of like that happening out of your control. You know what I mean? And so like, I saw that a lot, which I found like really, again, endearing. And I know that like her thing with Camille, like, you know, that sort of faux rivalry that they kind of cultivated for the show was faux, but it was very Housewives-ian at some points. But like, but they were talking about like how competitive their high schools were, or, you know, starting a junior member committee of Operation Smile at their different high schools and like to be competitive over that. It provided for some like entertaining TV, I think, still.
I mean, the Operation Smile thing was such classic Real Housewives of New York.
Yeah.
Like, I love that.
It was so good. So let's go to Kelly. So this is from, again, the Vanessa Gregoriadis piece that I read, and I just thought it was a fun tidbit. So I'm going to read this for you. Kelly is a junior who was brought to the audition by Real Housewife Jill Zarin's daughter, Allie, a schoolmate. I went to the interview for the show on Friday and rushed to the Jitney after for the Hamptons. When I got home, I went into the den with my parents and told them, after school today, Allie took me to an audition for a reality show and we have to sign the contract by tomorrow. She and Allie don't speak anymore. If you really want to know the gossip, which I'm not sure you do, Allie says that Kelly didn't invite her to her birthday party, so she's done with her. That's the kind of stuff we're working with. Amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And honestly, I wish like that kind of stuff was incorporated more into the show, because high schoolers, especially when like you're 15 and 16, the drama is so ludicrous and so silly.
Exactly.
But in a way that echoes the ludicrousness and the silliness of Real Housewives now. Like, the reason I think they're so compelling is because their drama is so juvenile. So to actually see juveniles with that juvenile drama is like really fun and funny.
I completely agree, but they didn't really give us that as much. Like it really was trying to be adult drama. But Kelly is the one who, I think a memorable part of her time on the show is the fact that she lives alone on the Upper East Side while her parents live out in the Hamptons. She wants to be a singer, and she actually like released a song a couple years after the show that I found the music video for. It's kind of good, I have to say. It's kind of a little bop. Gets forgotten in the broader Bravo music conversation. But she's part of this sort of like love triangle thing with Sebastian. You know, Kelly, to me, her most memorable moments were like when she was sort of clocking PC and giving him a taste of his own medicine. And like, you know, she says, because you wear tights and say, darling, that's maturity. I must have missed that memo. Like she was coming into her own as the show was going on, I would say. What did you take from Kelly during the rewatch?
I thought she was like the perfect foil to PC in a way that like, you know, the queen bee of every Real Housewives has to have like their one like antagonizer.
Yes.
And I thought like she was great in that role. I loved that she was so, hurt and annoyed by the fact that Jesse and PC treated her like she was a child because she was 2 years younger. I remember that feeling of not wanting to be dismissed by the older kids.
Yeah.
Because I'm just as mature as you. Like, it's such a classic, like, 16-year-old way of behaving.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned the living alone thing. Like, that blew my mind when I first watched it all those years ago. And it's no less shocking to me now. Like, I'm a grown adult and I can't fathom the fact that a 16-year-old was living by herself with her brother in an apartment on the Upper East Side. It's absolutely wild to me.
It's wild. And I think it speaks to, like, she was pretty mature, honestly, as far as this group went. And, like, I think some of the other kids, if they had been put in that position, they wouldn't have handled it in the way that she did. But, like, she kind of just, like, lived like a, she went to school, she went to her vocal lessons, and then she, like, went to dinner, you know, like, that was her life.
Yeah.
And, like, she could have gone crazier, but she seemed like she had a good head on her shoulders. So she was kind of just like a steady, I think, presence on the show mostly.
Yeah. Like, she didn't do anything too crazy or too funny, but she was good, I think, for the plot. You need someone who's helping to drive the show forward and can sort of be the avatar for fans to, like, call out when people are being unreasonable or when things are going too off the rails. Like, that's like a good centering presence to have on any of these reality shows. And I think mm-hmm. she was great casting for that, with the added benefit of having just, like, larger than life circumstances that she was living, like the, you know, being by herself in an apartment on the Upper East Side, or having the singing aspirations. She, mm-hmm. before Candace Dillard Bassett might rank as the best vocalist on a Bravo reality show.
She had an amazing voice, genuinely. When she got up
yeah.
to perform at Sebastian's little charity dinner, I was like, damn, you know? Speaking of Sebastian, he, I think, is also probably one of the people that sort of lives rent-free in the minds of people who were watching Bravo back then. He was the playboy. He was always talking about hooking up with chicks. And, like, that was, like, his thing. He even goes to lunch with his dad, and, like, his dad, like, all he asks about are the girls in his life. But ultimately, I kind of felt like, yeah, he was sort of this playboy guy, but, like, there was never a moment on this season where I was like, where it aged poorly, where it was like, oh, he's treating these girls not well, or, oh, like, you know what I mean? Like, it all was pretty mm-hmm. respectful at the end of the day. Like, that's kind of my big takeaway from Sebastian.
Yeah. So they're, again, like, the juvenile thing, they're too young to really be that gross to each other.
Like, yeah.
Even if he fancies himself a playboy, he only has enough life experience for that to manifest in the limited way that it does on the show.
Right.
But for me too, like, he, more than I think the other characters on the show, and with, like, the fashion and all of that, he's the most time capsule of that specific year to me. Like, the hair thing.
The hair. The Justin Bieber, Ryan Sheckler.
Jonas Brothers,
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. shoulder length with the swooped bangs, like, blown out. It's, like, such of that time. And I remember, like, guys who had that hair didn't need to have a personality in the year 2009. All that mattered was that you had that hair and people thought you were interesting, cool, hot, even if you weren't that hot. It's, if you had that hair, you were fine. And
he spoke French, oh, yes. which is an added benefit for him.
He spoke French quite poorly. He was not good at it. But, you know, he didn't really have a personality or, like, any reason to be the most in demand, you know, hottie of the Upper East Side. It was just the fact that he had the hair. And I, like, watching it back now, I was really struck by that. Like, oh, wait, like, you're such that guy from 2009.
Yeah, he was the archetype for sure. He was the Nate Archibald of NYC prep. Absolutely.
He's also the one, I think, that was emblematic of that time more so than the other kids, because he was still operating under the, like, my family is rich, we're privileged, and everything is going to work out no matter if I'm
for sure
trying hard or pursuing things. Like, everyone else had ambitions and were, you know, concerned about the resumes. And, like, even PC, who came from this massively wealthy family, was smart and driven and, like, trying hard, where he just seems to be like, whatever, I'm hot and rich, and that's all I got to be.
100%. And it's like, we see that it's like the only thing that he does outside of chasing girls is the very last episode. All of a sudden he cares about building wells in Africa. That's his quote. And so he throws like this like impromptu charity dinner in like 2 seconds, and it had his friend's dad's restaurant. and he only invites girls to it. So it's just like that. That's very emblematic of what you just said. I completely agree with that. Next on the list is Camille. So she's sort of like the goody two shoes, like really driven. Her life dream is to go to Harvard and, you know, all that. She has this sort of power play thing with Jesse, wants to get on the Operation Smile team. To me, it felt like Camille, I felt the producers through her a lot in terms of like, she's always trying to get the information out of people. Like she will invite Taylor to shop at Intermix and like just only so she can get information about Sebastian. Or like, you know, in the finale, she's being like really cruel about Jesse's event and fashion show. But it, to me, that just felt like before the event, the producers had said like, okay, you are going to ascend to being the it girl next year. So like, you should sort of assert yourself at this event. That's sort of how I read Camille. Felt like she overplayed her hand, but maybe not completely via her own choices. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you know, when a new housewife joins now and you can tell that they're like students of Real Housewives and try to behave as they think a Real Housewife should based on doing their own homework. Camille seemed like that to me on Noisy Prep. Like she had, you know, clearly a background knowledge of what reality TV should be like. And she was trying to check off all those boxes. Mm-hmm. She was the one who was like paired most often and most awkwardly with random people she would not organically associate with. Like she was somehow like the link between all of these like different spokes of.
Yeah. She had one-on-one scenes with most of the people. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were never like, they never made sense. No. Like,
why are you having like a walk and talk with PC at the Natural History Museum?
Right. Like that was so bizarre. And PC was like, I haven't been here since I was three. And like their walk and talk was to talk about PC being rude at her dinner party, which she only invited him to because she had to for the show. It was just, it was all so unrealistic.
Yeah.
In a way that actually, like, I feel bad now watching because she was the most annoying person on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the reason for that is because of all we've just been saying, like producer interference, like her thinking like she knew what would make good TV, her being paired in these really unorganic and awkward situations.
Yeah, she wanted to be sort of the Blair Waldorf of it in some ways. She always had the headband on and all those things. And I think it speaks to also like, you know, the nature of reality shows. We need different settings. We need to be, you know, here and there. They couldn't film at the schools for the most part. And so it's like, what are they going to just film in all their apartments all the time? Just like them texting on couches. Like, no, they had to like go to Intermix and like walk around the store, do 20 laps around the store and have a conversation. Like it felt so awkward seeing kids do that. Because on Housewives, great, do it. I don't care. But kids don't do that kind of shit.
I know. I felt so bad for them. We're like, so many conversations were happening like in the rain,
yeah,
like wind blowing their hair everywhere in front of Columbus Circle, or like the awkward Taylor Sebastian scene that happens at the rotating cube in Astor Place.
Oh my God.
And it's all because they couldn't film in any school related function. So
no, exactly.
That's what they were left with.
It seemed like they could film at Taylor School, who was the public school one, and that's they filmed things on hers. I know. And so that she's the last one on this list, and I just felt so badly for Taylor, like basically the entire time. It just felt like she was just totally used for this series, and you know, she was part of this love triangle, even though it kind of just felt like she was just dating her boyfriend Cole, and like kind of they put Sebastian in the mix and like had her play that up. It felt like she was totally used by like Camille and some of the, and PC, she was like PC's like, you know, quote pet project. And he like bringing her fashion show. It just felt like really, they wanted a Jenny Humphrey, Vanessa-y character and they got it in Taylor. And she was just sort of she was the foil to everybody. And it just like, it just left a bad taste in my mouth. I felt really uneasy watching it.
And I feel bad because, you know, she was, what, 15 or 16 when they were filming the show. So I feel bad saying this, but she was really bad TV. Like, she had no personality that sparked in any way on camera. And you could tell that the producers were trying to, like, drag anything out of her mouth. And she couldn't really, like, formulate a coherent sentence or opinion about anybody or anything. She just kind of like giggled and rolled her eyes and would like play with her hair. And that to me was like the glaring example of, oh, I'm watching a child on screen right now.
100%. It would be like Taylor, age 15, you know, and it was just like, ah, oh, really?
And she's just like awkwardly like squirming.
Yeah.
And like,
and she was the one that said the most. She said the phrase like New York prep school scene all the time. And that to me was like, she never would have said that. That is whoever's interviewing her in the confessionals. Like that's what they were feeding her essentially. And like, it made me pretty sad, honestly, to like watch the Taylor stuff. And because she just didn't really know what she was getting herself into.
Yeah. But she's also the one I think had the most like wannabe Real Housewives mom.
Yes.
Like,
oh yeah.
Her mom was such a part of the show and she was so like giddy about getting into the drama and the gossip.
The grades. With, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I felt bad for her for that situation too, because it almost seemed like a show mom kind of vibe with them.
Completely, completely. Lastly, before we get to sort of just like overall thoughts, there were some side characters here that I thought actually I was most drawn to some of them, honestly, like some of the friends who would pop in and out of this show. Like Jesse has this friend Zoe at the beginning, who's like, she lives in like this like cool downtown loft with her family, and like she has the birthday party and she just like dresses kind of eccentrically, and I kind of just loved her. They have this friend Kat who shows up in the back half, who's like, she's kind of the archetype of one of the Gossip Girly characters, and like I don't know why she wasn't one of the full-time people. The parents are obviously side characters. There's people that they kind of use to uphold the show too, which I just found that really interesting.
Yeah, and again, like with the how awkward the Taylor scenes were, you could tell that like the girls that surrounded her, like her so-called friends and classmates, they were basically like instructed to be incredibly invested in her dating, in her dance classes, in her gymnastics, like all they cared about was Taylor succeeding. And like in high school, that is not the case. Like these were people who are just instructed to like, in this one scene, you're going to root and cheer for Taylor. I found those like background extras to be really funny. And I loved, it's also one of the things we're watching this. When we rewatch this now, it's like with 15 years of having seen more Real Housewives. I loved the Zoe being downtown was her entire character trait. It like reminded me how everyone was like so mystified by Carol because she happened to live in Greenwich Village. Like we don't have to like know anything else about her, just that she lives downtown. That says everything we have to know.
100%. She lives in this downtown loft, the weird elevator. And it's just like, that's her life. You know, she deals with that every day. So I did read this article written by Richard Lawson, who you mentioned earlier. He did a rewatch, which I didn't realize. But there's just two things I want to read to you, because I feel like it sort of put some of the stuff that I was thinking about into words. From this present day perspective, NYC prep is bone chilling. I sat in front of the TV this week and wanted to yell, quote, "Don't go in there," as if I was watching a horror movie. And that's kind of what we were talking about, I think, in terms of like, you know, we know, like you just said, we know with the extra 15 years of reality TV evolving and just like the experience of watching it and knowing how this works. They didn't have that at the time, though, you know, and like it's just, and you think about the fact that none of these people had gotten it, or some of them had gotten into college, but some of them had not even started applying to college yet. And this is going to be out there, you know, this show is going to be out there for anybody to look up, and you just knew it wasn't ending up the way that they pictured it ending up.
Yeah. And like, I don't want us to compare. I don't want to make a direct comparison between this show and this, but the Quiet on Set documentary series that just came out, the sort of detailing how traumatizing being involved in show business can be for people at a young age when they don't really have the maturity or the wisdom to understand what they're signing up for. I think this was a great example of kids thinking at the time this was going to be great for them, and the train driving right into like a brick wall, and it's just a train wreck. I think the only person, when I googled what everyone's up to, that seems to have any sort of good experience come out of this was Jessie.
Yeah.
Like she got to go to FIT, she works in fashion, she's level-headed now, but it seems to like sort of ruin everyone else's lives. Like Camille was kicked out of school and didn't get into Harvard. PC kind of went off the deep end, from what I can tell, you know, in all the things I've written about him since. Taylor disappeared completely from any sort of public life, and she has no social media. Like, it just doesn't seem like this was a great experience for anybody.
I know. And like, Sebastian, I saw that he went to college at Charleston, which like tracks. It's very, the ratio of women to men there is in his favor, I would say. Now he's like married to an influencer and they have a son. Kelly, like the singing aspirations, I think died down, but I read somewhere that she is in PR at a record label. So things worked out for her, but not in the way that she expected mm-hmm. them to. It makes me think of like whether they could or would ever do a show like this again. I just don't know how it would work. And I don't think it's something that, I mean, upon rewatching, like it wasn't, in some ways, I guess it was the show that I remembered. And like, and there were so many things that I did remember about it, but the overall feeling of watching it was completely different 15 years later for me. And I just don't know if they could, or whether it's even worth trying to do something like that and make it feel better watching.
Yeah. And I think Bravo 2 seemed to realize that this was a nightmare, A, to produce, and B, problematic as content, because I think Andy Cohen was asked recently if they would ever do another season of NYC Prep. And he basically said it's a miracle that they even had one season of that at all, because getting the content was impossible. They weren't able to shoot anywhere, just like the ethical issues of these being kids was also impossible. So I think it was like an experiment that everyone learned their lesson from.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely like it lived in my head as something that was like, oh, like that was such a great one season show. You know, like that's how I thought about it mm-hmm. for so long. I'm not going to think about it that way anymore. But
yeah.
And I think a part of it, maybe this gets into like what Andy was implying about his comment about it being a miracle they got the show made. But like, you also noticed just like editing things that were just like so sloppy and like kind of clunky. Like they were clearly cutting and splicing a lot of sound bites from different places and putting them in to places they didn't belong and repeating certain lines. You know, like I was noticing all these things that maybe it's just being sort of like a studied reality TV viewer, but mm-hmm. it felt pretty obvious to me that even the show itself was like, we've come so far in terms of the production, at least.
Yeah. Like all of those one-on-one dinner scenes where like they were between the characters or the dates, you could tell that it was just two 15-year-olds staring at each other at a restaurant, silent right. for like 45 minutes because they had nothing to talk about. And then like you clearly just had the producer say, just say this and we can get out of here.
Yeah. And everybody else at the restaurant's like 85 years old.
Right.
Oh my God. Well, Kevin, is there anything else that you were thinking about that came to NYC Prep, or have you kind of gotten most of your thoughts out?
I mean, I sort of alluded to this earlier when we were talking about Sebastian, but to me, the most fun that I had watching it was the fashion. The skinny scarves that were like wrapped around and the...
So many scarves.
Like the all the winter hats that people were wearing all the time. It was like such a beanies and scarf era of fashion.
I loved also the blackberry, all the blackberries.
There's
a quote at some point where somebody's mom is like, stop texting. She's like, I'm not texting, I'm BBMing.
Right. yeah, that was, I mean, it's such a time capsule. That, to me, that was like the most fun of watching, was like digging up the time capsule at that time.
Yeah, the signifiers of that era were really fun to be reminded of. Well, Kevin, this is fun. I think it was honestly, I feel like it was a fruitful exercise. I think it was worth revisiting in some ways that we asked some important questions. But thanks so much for doing this. Where can people read your writing, follow you for more of your work?
Yeah, I edit the Daily Beast Obsessed. So it's thedailybeast.com/obsessed. My Twitter and Instagram and all social media stuff is at KP Fallon. This has been really fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really fun. Of course. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.